From Michigan Public, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, what we know about the new Ford Fathom, the automaker's long-anticipated small electric truck project.
And if they can make them affordable, then you don't need necessarily the big federal tax incentive.
Then a visit from the band Rusty Snails in our studio.
You hear us making tea. You hear the tea whistle. You hear rain and like a storm. So if you listen to it as a whole, it tells like a whole story and it really transports you.
And the latest episode of The Dish takes us to a fantastic Turkish eatery in Kalamazoo.
At the same time, I have more responsibility to let them to taste good food. I don't want them to remember, the grape leaves is disaster.
All that's coming up today on Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. Today, we're offering a lesson in Turkish flavors from a Kalamazoo couple who's running the city's only Turkish restaurant.
When you are the only one who is responsible to represent the Turkish food, you cannot say anything bad or anything like that. You need to think like 100 times more than the normal.
What they have is really unique, even across Michigan. We'll hear about them in a bit. But first, the pain at the pump is real. And if you look at the global picture, electric vehicle sales are doing very well so far this year. Asian and European consumers have been hip to EVs for some time now. But would it surprise you to know that in recent months, countries like South Africa, Colombia, and Australia are buying in? At this point, the Ford Motor Company offers a new small truck model, the Fathom. With domestic policy on EVs still in flux, Ford is making another run at a fully electric model and says it will start taking orders on the Fathom early next year. Jamie LaRoe reports on automotive matters, especially Ford, for the Detroit Free Press, and she joins us now. Hey, Jamie.
Hi, April.
Oh, the whiplash. I am so confused. First, Ford announces a couple of years ago it is transitioning to an electric fleet, and then it logs some big losses on EVs, partly because of federal incentive policies, and it stops producing its biggest electric truck, the Lightning, and puts brakes on some other planned models. Okay, so now we're back in it again with a smaller truck and plans for a luxury electric Lincoln. I mean, can you just explain for us how Ford is articulating its big picture plan in this moment?
Sure, yes. Well, first of all, to clarify, Ford is not discontinuing the Lightning. They're just changing it to an extended range electric vehicle, which means it has a little generator and it's like a backup generator that can give you extra range. So the Lightning will still exist. It's just changing from all electric to an extended range vehicle.
Thank you for the clarifier.
Sure. I know a lot of people are very confused about that. So they didn't want to completely exit it. Ford knew that there's definitely going to be a need for these kinds of vehicles. And they're also very committed to hybrids. So anyhow, getting back to the Fathom, it's part of a family of electric vehicles that Ford is planning with their eye on the fact that going forward, there is going to be a greater need for electric vehicles. And if they can make them affordable, then you don't need necessarily the big federal tax incentive that has been carrying EV sales in the past. You can sell them if you have them at an affordable price, if you offer good range, that people won't have range anxiety. Many times, too, they'll even give discounts on installing chargers in your home and that sort of thing so that there aren't those infrastructure concerns. So this is what Ford is looking at, and they've developed their universal electric vehicle platform that they are putting in at their Louisville assembly plant in Kentucky, where they're going to build this family of small vehicles, of electric vehicles. And they've also developed a new assembly line system that is going to be more efficient, use less parts, bringing down cost, so that they can start selling these vehicles at prices that are more, quote unquote, affordable.
Jamie, that universal electric vehicle platform, I've been hearing a lot about it, that this is the first model that Ford has built on this platform, and Ford spent a lot of money developing it, but I'm still not quite sure I understand what it is. Does the platform pertain more to vehicle design or to the manufacturing method?
It's both. The platform itself will be what supports the vehicle. And it's also part of this new manufacturing process that Ford has come up with as well. Instead of a straight assembly line, there will be three different parts of the vehicle that are each separately built. And then it comes together, like almost like a wheel, comes together at the end, like in a hub. And Ford is saying that is going to be a less expensive way to build it because it will use less parts.
So a couple of weeks ago, we learned the name Fathom and got just a little bit of a preview pick. But can you compare what we know of the Fathom so far to some of the other small hybrid and electric trucks that are out there on the market right now?
Well, you know, they have released some pictures of it with the tape that disguises it. It's a midsize truck. It looks kind of like a smaller truck. And you know, you can just see the shape of it. That's really all you can see in terms of the pictures they've released of it. But it is, you know, supposed to be around $30,000. And they haven't released in terms of range or anything, any specs like that on it. But it will use for a standard range battery, and other EVs that have that battery get about 240 to 250 miles range on a full charge.
I know that Chinese automakers have a great many electric offerings on the global market these days. Jamie, do you get the sense that the Fathom was designed more with domestic consumers who might be electric curious in mind? Or do you think it comes back to the global market, which, you know, is not a small part of Ford's calculations with any new model?
Well, right now it's aimed at the U.S. market. But if you listen to any comments from Jim Farley or Bill Ford, you know, they're both very aware of the Chinese automakers' presence and the fact that they likely will be here at some point. And those Chinese EVs, if you Google any of those, take a look at them, they are really attractive and they're very affordable. You get almost like a luxury vehicle for a $30,000 price tag. And the reason they're affordable is because the Chinese government subsidizes a lot of the costs. So those automakers can afford to make them that price.
I wonder, you mentioned the fact that hybrids have been selling reasonably well for Ford. Do you think there's any reason to believe that the hybrid Maverick trucks' days might be numbered with the Fathom coming into production?
I haven't heard that. In fact, the dealers that I talked to just came back from a dealer meeting in Las Vegas where they said Ford leadership was very bullish on hybrid engines and that they are committed to it and that there will be hybrid offerings in most every vehicle in Ford's lineup. I think Ford knows with gasoline prices and with people still reluctant to fully commit to full electric, hybrid is that nice alternative. So why pull that from your market right now?
Sure. Did you hear any other comments from the dealers about what they've seen of the Fathom so far?
I mean, just the fact that it's this mid-sized truck. It's kind of based on the Maverick, but it's all electric. It's sharp. It's beautiful. You know, words like that. But these are dealers, so of course they're going to say that. But I'm sure it will be sharp. I'm sure it will be a hot design. I mean, Ford Skunk Works team, which is their electric vehicle development center in Long Beach, California, is the one designing it. And those are their whiz kids.
They really need a better name for that lab. I'm sorry. Jamie, it appears that Ford's stock price has been moving up a bit. Do you think that the pain of Ford's initial investments in electric might be behind it in terms of this very rocky period of trying to plan long term and then having conditions change so much?
Well, Ford has said that they expect to be break even with EVs in the next few years here. So they are narrowing their losses. If you follow each quarter, their electric vehicle unit has narrowed the losses. They're still not profitable, but they are narrowing how much they lost. And I think that once they get this UEV going, and then if we have a shift in the market where people are once again open to buying EVs, then they might become profitable sooner than they expect to. But right now, they've said they expect to break even by 2030.
Jamie Leroux covers Ford and other automotive matters of interest at the Detroit Free Press. You can read some of her recent clips about EVs at freep.com. Jamie, thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Yesterday, right around this part of the day, we had a most unfortunately timed technical problem. During Lindsay Smith's story about the Christian Brotherhood, the Servants of the Word, our broadcast signal dropped out just as we were about to hear from Noelle Lynn. She's someone who was involved in Christian missionary work decades ago and got to know several brothers in the order. And she had a chance to observe them at work before several members were charged with sexually abusing minors. Noelle has never spoken publicly about those times before now. This was how Noelle reacted when Lindsay asked back in 2019 if she thought that some Brotherhood members might have been involved in grooming young people.
Heck yes, there's something more going on. Call me a conspiracy theorist, call me crazy. They're just making it sound like he just made a couple mistakes when really he was calculated. His actions were consistent. So I do think there's a bigger problem. I do think there are more people being protected. And it really breaks my heart to say that.
This story is something many other news sources have not reported. If you missed it, or just the part that happened during the dropout, we really recommend you go check out Lindsay's story on the web. You can find it at michiganpublic.org. We have something really special for you coming up after we take a short break. It's an acoustic brother-sister duo that reps their Michigan roots pretty hard.
I'm a northern man, my stormy cromer hat to my vowels.
Stick around for the in-studio performance and conversation with the Rusty Snails after this break.
In a way a snowmobile howls. Pray for the long nights, short days.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We're adding the Rusty Snails to our end-of-summer playlists. This band is 100% Michigan-made.
I really hope you're doing all right.
Their debut album, Two Hearted, is packed with tracks like Lake Superior Song, Must Be the Weather, and Michigan is Nice. But all this regional specific writing does not come across as gimmicky. The Rusty Snails lean into an Americana sound that's thoughtful and haunting. Nolan and Carlina Kelly are the brother and sister duo behind the Rusty Snails. We invited them to the Stateside studio to chat and share a couple of songs. Nolan, Carly, welcome.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for coming today. Your social media presence really embraces the whole Michigan-made aspect of what you're doing.
Yeah.
What percentage of that is just being strategic about the algorithm? And what percentage of it is the wish to really highlight that piece of where we all come from and what formed you two?
Everything that's on there is like us camping or like, you know, our weekend adventures that we take video. Nolan does a lot of videography stuff and like has always put videos together, just like put on YouTube for ourselves. And then when we started doing this music stuff, we're like, well, there's our content.
Because you have to be in all directions at once.
Yeah.
I mean, Can you guys play those Michigan songs out of state?
That's the question, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right.
That's the question, isn't
it? We're
going
to find out.
Yeah. We've had really good response in Michigan, but if it will market well out, I've been trying to be strategic on, you know, how do you make a song market well here, our home, and then also outside. Right. Having a lot more luck marketing it to our home state.
Yeah, regionally, for sure.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the origin story about where you two grew up?
Yeah, we grew up in Hazlitt, Michigan, right outside of Lansing. I still live in Hazlitt. I moved back during COVID. That's where my parents are, and I like being in the middle because I can go anywhere pretty quick.
And I live in Metro Detroit. I live in Southfield. So,
is Clan Kelly a musical family? Or was this something that surprised your parents?
Oh, no. They're both musical. My dad, very musical. They got us into music very young, and then Nolan was a little bit later.
Yeah,
jumping on that.
I didn't really realize I could play music until I was like 18, probably. And I was like, "Well, we could try this."
Yeah, yeah. I was always in like choirs. MSU Children's Choir. I did violin since I was six, and then when I was like in college, I was like, "You gotta play this instrument, bud."
Our father plays all the brass you hear in our recordings. Is my dad?
Wow,
yeah. The trumpet. He plays the trumpet.
That's
plays
so
guitar
awesome.
Really well. My mom does piano. So,
family band.
Yeah.
I mean, does dad ever show up at the gig?
He's always there.
He's always there, yeah.
It's more of a trio a lot of the times now.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah,
when
it's
we're
great.
Gigging, the full band, he's there, dude. When we do the full band, it's a 7-piece, and he's there playing horn with us.
Well, let's hear another song. I know you brought something that is new that you've been working on.
Yeah.
Either of you want to set this one up for us?
Night and Day, this song, I wrote this song, we wrote like the last verse together, but I got this song out in like 20 minutes, it was wrote, you know, and it flowed out easy, and it was one of those ones that just comes out real quick, when it's like it's a haunting relationship tale.
Let's listen.
Night and day. I'm gonna love you night and day with every heartbeat. I'm gonna stay.
I drain the emotions till you're found. I'm not too happy when you're not around. Not around.
And don't
leave this about me.
I didn't choose
this life. Didn't choose me.
Chose violence and I walked it off. Kept on moving until you stopped. Until you stopped.
I watched the sunset over the lake. Ponder laughing, count my mistakes.
And don't.
Me. I didn't choose this life. You didn't choose me.
I've known for a while that our time's near. Maybe we can find someone who can stitch, mend all of this stubborn, brokenheartedness, heartedness. And don't
leave this about me. I didn't choose
nation.
That's my guess. Nolan and Carlina Kelly, The Rusty Snails, and an unreleased to this point track called Night and Day. You guys, that was chills. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
You two, I know that's one of the songs that you're working on with something very current. Can you talk about what you guys are going to be doing in Detroit?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're allowed to talk about it, but it's,
I think so.
We're doing a studio residency, artist residency at Assemble Sound Studios, getting to use their space, which is an awesome world-class studio.
How have you been recording? Because you have one full-length album at least and several EPs. But when you're not taking advantage of Garrett Kohler's supersonic crash pad, how do you record?
Yeah, we use our buddy, Robbie
Fraticelli.
Yeah.
Robbie Fraticelli.
He has a recording studio in Riotown in Lansing out of his house.
He's a genius on all the things musical. Like, I can barely plug things in to make noise.
Yeah, he can play any instrument. It's great fun. Yeah. He's actually coming to Assemble Sound. He'll be our producer there, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're not going lone, not playing a lone hand there.
No, no.
Folks who are listening, I don't need to explain why I feel your voices are so beautiful and complementary together. You know, I'm always a sucker for sibling harmony. But both of your voices also have this magnificent kind of old soul quality.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, Nolan especially, like, I don't know what old country artists, like, there's a note or two of, like, George Jones or Randy Travis going deep.
Yeah, take that. I like old country music.
Could you talk a little bit, each of you, about your pole stars for the vocals? Like, who inspired you as a singer or got you thinking about what it could sound like?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Carly, you want to go first and then maybe we can hear from Nolan?
Well, for me, I feel like my voice is a lot closer to, like, Alison Krauss, like the pure tones.
Your tears are made of gold. Make me wanna grow old with you, with you.
You know, I have a hard time, like, trying to get that raspy sound and stuff like that, that, you know, that folk music often has. So I kind of just lean into it. But I would say that's probably, like, the closest vibe that I have that matches my voice, but we're always reaching for, like, that, like, just soul folk that's, like, raspy and
texture,
almost ugly, you know.
Yeah. Nolan, how about you?
I've developed my voice a lot over the past few years, but listening to John Prine and John Craigie's a big influence of mine, and they kind of, a lot of the music I listen to doesn't sound like what my voice sounds like, and that's actually a problem sometimes. I try to sing a lot of songs that don't complement my voice very well, but
but I'd say as a duo, Ossie Elliott, I don't know if you've heard of them. They're a beautiful duo.
Yeah, they're awesome.
We really, like, try to hone in their sound, and Watch House.
Yeah.
Do you two write together or just take turns?
We do a lot of writing together. The whole first album was us writing together. More of the recent stuff that we'll be putting out, Nolan has done a lot more on his own because I've been birthing.
You're a mother now.
You're a new mom. Congratulations, Carly.
Thank you.
Birthing records, birthing songs.
Yes.
Birthing everything.
Birthing everything.
Just a whole lot. I wanted to shout out a song from, I think, that came out in 24, Lake Superior song.
And I hear a song like northern wine. A siren sings, the water's fine. And I feel eerie in the night under superior sky. He's got a cold and bitter heart. She claimed the lies of men 10 times the grand. The old Kitchigoon, he's got a cold and bitter heart. She claimed the lies of men 10 times the grand.
You guys wrote a sea shanty for the Great Lakes.
We did.
Did you? I mean, that was kind of, I guess that was at a time when we were seeing a lot of it in the feeds. Did you set out to try it as an experiment?
Yeah. Actually,
wow.
We kind of found, like, a tone, the tone, and as we were just messing around, and it was just
we
like,
found that first the first line in the chord progression. We said we gotta write something to this.
Yeah, we just like held on to that for a while, and then we finally, when we sat down to like do the album, we're like, we're adding a sea shanty. Let's write this. Yeah. And then Robbie helped us as well. He wrote it with us in studio.
Yeah.
And put it all together.
It must have been fun doing a deep dive in the sailor songs to sort of get in the headspace.
Yeah, I had to Google a few words.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're looking for this one rhyme.
Yeah.
Let me Google the names of ships.
What's a part of a boat that rhymes with romance?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah.
But that song was really fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
A lot of the Michigan artists that we've talked to write what I think of as Michigan summer songs, like the Lord Huron sound.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like you guys have a few Michigan winter gears.
Yes.
That were very enjoyable to explore.
Yeah, we love winter.
I love winter, man. Winter is a cool part of Michigan.
Yeah.
How would you describe like a winter sounding song? Like are some of the qualities that...
I put it in a minor key maybe?
Oh yeah. For sure.
I will say we do love to incorporate like the well tones and give you that like chill, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the record, in one of our Northern Man, that tune, it's a winter sounding song, I feel like.
I see us now after 30 years somehow. Couple of kids, too many dogs, more than enough love go around. But I'm hoping my prayers don't fall down on deaf ears, frostbitten ears. I'm counting down the ears.
We have like an elk call in there. We've got my dog.
In the studio version,
In the studio version, my dog. My little pit bull was howling one day in the right key. We put that in there in the chorus.
Did he get a credit on the record?
Yeah, Norman's in the credits. Yeah.
Good boy. Good boy, Norman.
There's a snowmobile like rev in there too.
No way.
Yeah. When we mentioned a snowmobile.
Yeah, and I feel like in that song, we were really trying to capture like snowmobiling at night in the woods. Like it's like spooky and beautiful and quiet. The snow like makes it so quiet.
And
the thoughts that come into your head when you're out there.
Yeah, you're bundled up, like you're warm, but you're cold. It's great.
Yeah, the silence of winter is really a cool experience. You just go outside and it's quiet.
Yeah,
magical. So the residency is happening. Can we assume that there's going to be another full-length album in the works, or are you just trying to keep it to the EPs right now?
Well, our plan was EPs.
Yeah, singles and EPs for a while. We definitely wanted to put out the album so people had something to listen to that they didn't have to wait for.
Yeah.
So we dove in, did that, and now we can just kind of sprinkle stuff here and there when we get it done so people don't have to wait so long.
It's so interesting how, you know, albums are still a thing, obviously, but there's not as much pressure on bands to just, like, grind out 12 tracks and... You know, some of which are going to be great because you've been working on them for 3 years, and some of which you might have just, I mean, some of the fast songs are great, but that can't be fun as a songwriter.
It's really cool to put an album together and tell like a whole story.
Yeah.
You can put stuff in between the tracks. Like on one of our songs, we have like, you hear us making tea, you hear the tea whistle, you hear rain and like a storm. So if you listen to it as a whole, it tells like a whole story and it really transports you when. If that was to be a single, like we have a shortened version without all of that just for listening as like a single in your playlist.
Yeah, when you're doing like an EP, we focus now too. It's like it's a real thing. It's like actually mixing for a Spotify algorithm. So you capture somebody within the first 3 seconds of the song. And that's something.
Wow.
Yeah. And especially marketing wise, if you're releasing an EP, it's easier to market 3 songs than it is 12.
Yeah. You lose some.
And that's kind of the double-edged sword of why it sucks, but it's necessary evil, I feel like.
Can you think of something that you have come up with driven by that, you know, that it's really got to be the first 3 seconds that might not have been there otherwise?
Yeah, maybe even Northern Man. And this was before it even was successful. We start with the ooze, and I was like, that's got to be the first thing you hear is just the ooze. Because I always like to sprinkle in some folly, you know, before, you know, 10 seconds of folly, some cool sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a whole playlist of songs that we like that have folly, so we can, like, refer back. Yeah. Like, we want it to sound like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before you go, band, I have to ask, the name, the Rusty Snails. Like, I feel like that could be one of any number of different kinds of bands. How did the name come to you?
We were moving a hot tub, actually.
Okay, that is the last thing I expected you to say.
We were moving a hot tub.
And this is like circa 2017.
Yeah, 2017. We were moving everything out of our old house, and this hot tub was in this trailer that was like half the size of the hot tub. And I just sent her a photo because I was behind it making sure the hot tub didn't fall off the trailer. That was my job. And I just sent her a photo.
Like you could do anything if you did, right?
Just say stop. Yeah. But, and I just said the Rusty Snails. It's a play on our family name.
Mm-hmm. Our grandma's maiden name is Rusnell. And so it just kind of came out. We were like, the Rusty Snails, at it again.
And then it's a good band name, too.
So. I'll say. Yeah. I just can't thank you enough for visiting. Nolan and Carly Kelly are the Rusty Snails, and you can find their music on Spotify, at their band website, and in all the usual digital music places. Nolan, Carly, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Great to hear.
Pleasure.
The Rusty Snails will be playing a show tonight at the Blind Pig in Ann Arbor. We're going to take a breather here. After that, we're headed for a place in Kalamazoo that you have to try. It serves up face-meltingly delicious Turkish food.
You can eat half of them in the lunch, half of them in the dinner, because it's huge.
The Dish checks in at Hagia Sophia next. You're with Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. We have another helping for you today of our podcast series, The Dish, focusing on chefs and their signature foods. This one's going to take us right to the intersection of Eastern and Western culinary styles. Mercedes and Ronia have been spending time at a Kalamazoo restaurant called Hagia Sophia. Let's listen.
I'm going to make gobit for you guys today. First, I will start with making the bread we made in the morning. And then let them wait a little bit, then ready to cook.
There's this small Turkish restaurant near Western Michigan University, and for some in Kalamazoo, it might be their first taste of this cuisine. That's a big responsibility, and owner Fatma Dursunoluk feels it every day.
When you are the only one who is responsible to represent the Turkish food, you cannot say anything bad or anything like that. You need to think like 100 times more than the normal. At the same time, I have more responsibility to let them to taste good food.
This is The Dish, a podcast telling Michigan's food stories one dish at a time. I'm Mercedes Mejia. Today, we're talking about what it means to be Kalamazoo's only Turkish restaurant and how Fatma and her husband Halil are bringing the flavors of their home to a community they love. Walk into Hagia Sophia and immediately you notice the woven dark blue tapestries on the walls and ornate chandeliers hanging from the ceiling. By the register, a cold case shows off the desserts, a variety of baklava and red velvet cake. On the tables, a small vase with fresh cut flowers. Past the dining room, Fatma moves quickly through the kitchen. She's wearing a royal blue hijab tucked under a loose black blazer. She dusts flour across the baking table before rolling it out into a circle. She's making the flatbread for a Turkish sandwich called gobit doner, also known as doner kebab.
Is that made, is that flour, water?
It's flour, water, yeast, and little baking soda. That's all. Then we will put some yogurt and egg yolk on the top. But if they are vegan, we use just nothing. We just cook right away, yeah. And I'm going to put the oven for 7 minutes.
And how hot is the oven?
It's 450 Fahrenheit. Mm.
So it's a popular dish.
It is. And today is a gobit day. We have $5 off for each gobit.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
The flatbread comes out round and puffy, thicker than a pita, and crispy on the outside. It's filled with beef or chicken, traditionally cooked on a vertical rotisserie, much like shawarma or gyro. And oddly enough, this particular sandwich is also popular in Germany.
In the 1960s, all the Germany has the factories, and then they need the workers in there. And then they got like the half of the Turkish people there to work in the factory. And all of them start to work in the factory, and all of their kids start to open a restaurant. And then they start to make gobits. When you go to Germany, everywhere is gobit. And everybody who live in Germany, they know the gobit. They come here, do you have the gobit like the we had in Germany? We said, yes, like, they, yeah, maybe they were working in the factory and they need to feel full.
And it was an easy thing to hold, you know, it's a sandwich, you can take it with you, you can hold it with your hand.
Yeah, and then you can eat half of them in the lunch, half of them in the dinner, because it's huge. And there's protein in it, there's salad in it, there's french fries in it, it's everything. Yeah, let me check my...
Wonderful, room. Okay. See, 20 seconds. Oh, there it is.
This is our bread.
Got perfect. Puffed up really nice.
The main idea in this gobit, when they eat, they need to feel really full. That's why I never like to put something less. I just like put a lot in it.
A few minutes later, my co-producer Ronia and I split one, made to order.
This is the gobit doner, fresh bread. Oh, look at that. That is a sandwich. The fresh bread is so pillowy and soft. The pickles hit.
Comparable to shawarma?
Very comparable. You have, you know, the lettuce, tomatoes, onions, meat, french fries, and mayo. And so that mayo kind of acts like the, what you would put, like a yogurt sauce.
The bread really makes it, I think. Really pillowy, but not too thick.
This is so delicious.
Is it?
The bread is so good.
I'm bringing more.
Fatma doesn't have a culinary background. She's an environmental engineer. She spent 10 years working with the United Nations on desertification and erosion in African countries. But the craving for the food she grew up with was strong.
And then when we moved here, we said, like, I was pregnant and I want to eat lahmacun. I can make lahmacun too, and I want to eat lahmacun, and there was no lahmacun in Michigan, even several places.
Lahmacun is like Turkish pizza, thin, crispy flatbread topped with minced meat and baked until golden.
When we opened the restaurant, I was like 9 months pregnant. After 10 days, 9 months, 10 days, I gave birth. And after like 2 weeks, I come back.
Actually, she went to labor literally from the kitchen.
Yes, I did.
That's Fatma's husband, Khalil.
I still remember that day, you know, she didn't come to the restaurant because she wasn't feeling well, because I knew that, you know, it could be labor anytime, you know, because it was already past 9 months. So she came to here to eat something, you know. Then we got some orders, even though I told her that, yeah, just stay here. She went to kitchen. She prepared the food, and then she said to me, Halil, we need to go to labor.
Yeah, and then after 2 hours, we had the baby.
That hustle is the heart of Hagia Sophia. Fatma isn't just feeding people. She's building a bridge between her culture and her life in Kalamazoo, one gobit doner at a time.
What does the dish that you made, what does it represent for you, your family, or your culture?
Happiness. For me, it's happiness.
Mix everything and still taste good.
The couple opened Hagia Sophia in a space that generations of Western students knew as Bruno's. Fatma and Khalil took over the pizzeria in 2024, and you can still order a pie when you visit.
What does it feel like to take over this place with that history in Kalamazoo?
For me, I'm so happy. And then we still use the same like the plate, same spoon, same fork the Bruno used. And we are so respect for the Bruno's memory. And it's the thing like the who support Bruno's come here to support us. I'm so happy to hear and Bruno's place because I love the people around here and the Kalamazoo. They support local people.
I was happy because it was Bruno's, but I was... How can I say that? How many months did I work here to put in a shade?
6 or 7 months.
6 or 7 months. There was a walking hooligan downstairs by the stairs. I can tell you that it was a scene. You know, when you see that, it's a scene from a horror movie. You know, somebody gonna come out and grab you inside. I wish I had the photographs, you know. I didn't took two photos, but it was that scary.
It's sketched in your memory.
Yeah.
you said you guys met here at Bruno's, or you ate here before when you were kind of dating?
We didn't meet here. It's a long story. We met for a long time ago. But when we were students, yeah, we come here.
So you were students here at Western?
Yeah.
Both of us.
Yeah, I was doing my master. He was doing his master. I was doing in geography. At the time, it was 2013.
Between 13 to 15.
14, 15, yeah. Yeah, I was doing my master and he was doing his master. And then it's our, like, school way. That's why we were meeting here.
After graduate school, Fatma and Halil lived in Seattle and San Diego. But something kept pulling them back.
I don't know. Is there something wrong with the Kalamazoo's water? It's take you back in here no matter what. It's been like, when I come to Kalamazoo, I said, this is the place to settle down and raise kids. I don't know. It's like something make me give the peace, and then I feel like a home. After like 10 years, when my big one come to elementary age, when 7, I said, okay, let's look the opportunity to go back and then raise them there. Because I love here. I mean, I don't know. And then at this time, he got job offer from the cybersecurity, and then he just come back. And the weather thing, I don't know. Like, they say, how do you guys live in Kalamazoo? There's a lot of snow and then storm. I mean, you can't explain, like, the feeling to being here. And then I belong in here. I feel like I belong in here.
By day, Halil teaches computer science and cybersecurity at Western. And as he explains, Hagia Sophia isn't just a name. It carries centuries of meaning.
So Hagia Sophia, actually, it's a Latin word. And it's a combination of the two words. Hagia means sacred, holy, and Sophia means knowledge. So it's like a sacred knowledge. And it comes from a mosque, used to be church.
And school. This place, mosque, church, school, it's amazing place. I don't know if you guys ever seen. It's very famous in Istanbul.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I did see.
They call it in English Hagia Sophia.
Hagia Sophia.
Hagia Sophia. Yeah. It's a very magical place.
Well, what does it mean to be Kalamazoo's only Turkish restaurant? Do you feel like you have a responsibility?
I do. For me, I feel, I mean, whenever they ask me any question, I'm so careful to give answer because they will not forget and they will recall that as a, like the Turkish people. And like, for example, they come here and then they say like, what do you think about Arabic food? I mean, like they are trying to compare us. Like, what do you think about Arabic food and Turkish food? I say like, they are two different things. But when you are the only one who responsible to represent the Turkish food, you cannot say anything bad or anything. Like, you need to think like 100 times more than the normal. So it gave me more responsibility when you talk. At the same time, I have more responsibility to let them to taste good food. I don't want them to remember, the grape leaves is disaster. That's why I'm very like careful about the cooking. But of course we have mistakes. We are still learning. Sometimes we are late. Sometimes we overcook. It's restaurant. It's like up and down. But I feel very responsible. I'm trying to my best as much as I can.
That care also extends to what's not on the menu.
Do you guys have hummus on the menu?
No, we don't.
This is our line. If the one Turkish restaurant has hummus, it's not a real Turkish restaurant. Because we don't have hummus in our culture. It's Arabic.
Totally Arabic. Totally. No, we can debate on so many things. For example, döner and shawarma, yogurts with the Greek people, baklava with Greek people, grape leaves with Greek and Arabic people. We debate all of them, okay? But when it comes to the hummus, I don't debate with anyone because I know it's Arabic.
Yeah, not at all. Okay, they do a lot of Turkish restaurants sell the hummus because it's like it's dipping, it goes with everything, and we love hummus. It's so delicious. We eat.
I love.
But we don't sell because it's if we say like the authentic, then everything should be authentic, and hummus not at all.
And there is another thing I need to tell you. We have a silent agreement with the other Middle Eastern restaurant, Mediterranean restaurants. I'm not entering their area. They don't enter my area. For example, all the kebabs
it's not
they sell.
Okay, you respect them.
I respect them. So the thing is that kebab is Turkish. The word itself Turkish. Okay, in our culture we have more than 400 different kinds of kebab. The most popular one is the shish kebab. People knows that. And other Arabic restaurants, the Arabic restaurants in here do the shish kebab. But I'm not entering, even though it's purely Turkish, because you know I respect them. So I expect the same thing from the Don.
Yeah, our friends open the hamburger place, and that's why we don't want to involve the hamburger in here.
But in the original plan, I was planning to sell hamburgers as well. But once he started doing it, I just removed it from the menu.
And building that menu wasn't easy.
Oh, it is the hardest part. It takes like three months, and then we were about to divorce. Because like I said, no, not this one. He said this one. Mom, this is the hardest thing. And then it was hard to save our marriage, but like we handled. Yeah, we survived.
So to be fair, you know, the worst position in any business is being the owner. You know, if somebody is not showing up, you have to cover for him or her. You know, you have to clean it up. I'm cleaning the restrooms, dining room. I'm cooking, you know, when it's need to be. I'm going to shopping. I'm paying. Unfortunately, I'm paying.
This is the only difference between us. I get paid. He's not.
So that is the difference.
Out in the dining room, I found customers Leslie Lull and Lynn Lavrenovic finishing their plates.
Oh my gosh, it was so good. It was delicious.
And have you been here before?
No, this is my first time.
What brought you here?
Recommendation.
Yes, I found the place online because I love Turkish food and I had never been able to find Turkish food in Kalamazoo. So I was so excited to find this location and get to enjoy some of my favorite food again.
That's great. What did you order?
The same. I got the gobe doner.
Oh, that's so good. It's delicious, right? And you took some home with you because it's so big.
Oh, no. We cleaned our plates. We're taking home some baklava.
That's the same baklava from that cold case up front. It's flown in from Turkey, just like the red velvet cake. And Fatma always keeps an eye on how people react to it.
I always watch.
Yeah.
I always, especially red velvet cake, whoever I give, I watch after the window, no matter what. And then they know, they used us. And in the first month, or like first couple, maybe first 2 years, whoever eat, like, we are waiting. And then, how is it? Did you like it? And then I'm coming and then he's going. How is it? Did you like it? And then he's coming and then the other cook. How is it? Did you like it? And then server's going. Like, we never let people to eat like peacefully because we were like so excited. Now, like at this, we go just like 2 times, but in the beginning, we go like 5-6 times. Like, we were so excited. At this time, we have like other Turkish friends to help us. And all of us like go and want to see, like, are they happy? Because it is the way for the satisfaction for us. It's like amazing when they feel like, when they like, still I'm doing for Gobit and Red Velvet, when they buy, they say, oh, it's so soft or something, and they smile. I watch you guys too. And it makes me so happy.
She wants to see the, you know, that first reaction to the food all the time.
Yeah.
That instant reaction is a different kind of satisfaction than Fatima's old job, where results could take years.
When I worked before for the like the desertification or like erosion, you mate and then you wait maybe 100 years or like the 10 years to see results. It made me so tired. When I do like and then they get the result in 1 minute, oh, okay, this is my job, not the other one. And yeah, that's the satisfaction, like when they are happy.
My name is Halil Dursunoğlu.
My name is Fatma Dursunoğlu.
We made the gobit today. And that is the dish.
Don't say end. We need to say this is the dish.
This is the dish.
Okay, we're just going to say this is the dish. 1, 2, 3. This is the dish.
Thanks to Halil and Fatma, owners of Hagia Sophia, Kalamazoo's only Turkish restaurant. If you want to see a map of all the places the dish has visited to date, we have them for you at michiganpublic.org/the dish. Do you have a favorite dish? Or maybe you want to nominate a chef or baker in your community? Submit your suggestions to The Dish and we'll try to get them in an upcoming episode. Submission form in the show notes. Or you can email thedish@michiganpublic.org. Today's episode was produced and mixed by me, Mercedes Mejia. Other producers are Ronia Kapansag, April Van Buren, Michelle Jokishpolo, and Laura Weber-Davis. Music by Blue Dot Sessions and Audio Network. Until next time, as my family always says, buen provecho.
And hey, speaking of your favorite eats, can we talk about dessert for a minute? We're looking in particular for stories about that most summertime of all the sweets, ice cream. Do you have a lifetime flavor of all flavors? Maybe something you're not able to get anymore? Or maybe someone who used to take you out for a cone? Tell us. You can email us or send a voice memo. The address, either way, is stateside@michiganpublic.org. We're really looking forward to hearing from you. That's all for Stateside for today. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.